In the midst of Japan's nationwide butter shortage, journalist Rika Machida finds herself drawn into the world of Monako Kaji, a plus-sized woman accused of murdering three men she met through dating services. What begins as professional curiosity evolves into dangerous obsession as Rika discovers there's something admirable in how Kaji demanded good treatment despite societal expectations, a sharp contrast to the self-restraint Rika observes in successful women around her and feels in herself. That constant pressure to remain small, both physically and metaphorically. When Kaji finally agrees to meet at the women's detention center, she establishes clear boundaries. She won't discuss her case, but will talk about food, her passion. Upon hearing Rika has been using margarine during the butter shortage, Kaji launches into a passionate diatribe, eyes flashing with genuine anger. "I cannot tolerate feminists and margarine." She instructs Rika to make rice with premium Eshiar butter and soy sauce, describing the experience with almost religious reverence. "When I'm eating good butter, I feel somehow as though I were falling. The body plummets, starting from the very tip of the tongue." This moment marks the beginning of Rika's dangerous seduction into a world where pleasure takes precedence over restraint, where food becomes almost erotic in its intensity, and where the boundaries between indulgence and destruction begin to blur ominously. Despite her writing success, Rika faces increasing scrutiny about her body. Colleagues make unsolicited comments during lunch, and even her progressive boyfriend Makoto suggests she might lose respect without conforming to beauty standards. Haven't we all felt pressure to shrink ourselves in a world that measures women's worth by appearance? When discussing these pressures with Kaji, she responds passionately against restrictive eating. "My mother was always on a diet," she explains, "always denying herself the food she loved." Kaji highlights the tension between personal autonomy and social expectations. As Rika adopts intuitive eating, she experiences unexpected benefits: improved skin, stronger hair, and consistent energy. Her journey raises essential questions. What might happen if women stopped apologizing for their appetites, both literal and metaphorical? What if we allowed ourselves to take up the space we deserve? Rika appears to embody traditional femininity. She's quit her job to focus on conceiving, her skin glows, and she prepares sumptuous meals in her Liberty Print home. Yet beneath this polished surface lies a woman struggling with fertility issues and a failing marriage. How often do we compare ourselves to seemingly perfect women, never seeing the cracks in their facades? The friendship fractures when Rika discovers Rika has been secretly visiting Kaji. The betrayal deepens when Kaji reveals his assessment. Rika is mentally unstable and sexually unfulfilled, her friendship with Rika stemming from twisted desires. When Rika disappears to Kanazawa on a mission connected to Kaji's case, Rika finds her cooking in the home of Kaji's final boyfriend. In this crisis, Rika realizes it's Rika who truly lives with honest passion. Their friendship ultimately transcends this crisis, with Rika moving in to care for the withdrawn Rika. Through this nurturing, both women discover that the deepest connections form when we allow ourselves to be vulnerable and honest. What creates a killer? Through Rika's investigation, we discover how Monako Kaji's disturbing worldview formed in rural Niigata. She emerges not as a simple villain, but as a woman shaped by trauma and twisted love. In Kaji's hometown, Rika meets Anna, Monako's reserved younger sister. We learn Kaji began puberty unusually early at 9, straining her relationship with her mother while bonding with her father. The pivotal revelation comes when Rika discovers that at 9, Anna hit a prowler who touched her inappropriately. Monako covered for her sister and developed a disturbing relationship with the injured man, even bringing him food. From him, she adopted the belief that women were responsible for men's behavior, telling Anna that men were weak, sensitive creatures needing forgiveness. This trauma explains Kaji's contradictory philosophy. In prison, she insists women exist to please men, yet demands respect for herself, refusing to conform to expectations about women's bodies, embodying the contradiction of being told to shrink while serving others. Throughout this story, food functions as a complex language, expressing desires, forging connections, and establishing power dynamics. For Kaji, butter represents rebellion against her mother's restrictive dieting and an embrace of pleasure. As Rika follows Kaji's culinary recommendations, each meal grows in significance. At Joel Robuchon, she savors exquisite dishes. An amuse-bouche of lemon jelly, bread with imported butter, and a layered avocado crab caviar creation that expanded like light suffusing her mouth. At a teppanyaki restaurant, aged sirloin enters her mouth like a warm, affectionate tongue, while garlic butter rice proves formidable. Food also connects to memory. When Rika makes macaroni gratin, the dish she failed to prepare for her father before his death, she confronts her guilt and realizes his death wasn't her fault. Food establishes power dynamics between characters. Kaji uses culinary knowledge to control Rika, while cooking becomes Rika's way to reclaim agency after her disgrace. A profound theme throughout this story is how characters transform grief and guilt through food and relationships. Rika's investigation of Kaji becomes intertwined with her unresolved grief over her father's death, which occurred after she broke a promise to make him macaroni gratin. When confronted by Kaji, Rika confesses that as a teenager, she skipped visiting her divorced father, lying about studying. Her father responded coldly, "You think I'm an idiot, don't you?" 3 days later, he died of a stroke without reconciliation. This confession creates a disturbing bond between the women, with Kaji claiming they're both murderers who withdrew care from others. Yet, when Rika finally makes that macaroni gratin and the sauce turns lumpy, this imperfection helps her realize her guilt was misplaced. Her father's death was inevitable, and no meal could have saved him. How many of us carry similar burdens, believing different actions could have prevented tragedy? The story examines how we navigate between performance and authenticity in our relationships with food, our bodies, and each other. Characters initially hide behind masks before revealing their true selves. Kaji appears as a femme fatale until Rika discovers a woman seeking connection while trapped in feminine performance. Her cooking, technically perfect but uninnovative, reflects her inability to move beyond performance into authentic expression. Similarly, Reiko's perfect housewife persona masks unhappiness. Her immaculate home and elaborate meals create an illusion that crumbles when confronted with fertility and marital problems. Food either reinforces performance or creates space for authenticity. When used to impress, cooking becomes another mask. When shared without agenda, it creates genuine connection. Eventually, Rika embraces greater authenticity, accepting her changed body, creating space for cooking and gathering, and acknowledging her limitations and desires. Her experience with Kaji expanded her world toward a more authentic way of being. Our hungers for food, connection, and meaning aren't shameful. When embraced honestly, they lead to a genuinely nourishing life.